Your Steve Jones Show podcast is loading now. The Steve Jones Show podcast is sponsored by Sunbury Motors, North 4th Street in Sunbury, and Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. Sports talk where your voice counts. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now from the Sunbury Motors Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15, Hummel's Wharf. Online at sunburymotors.com. Ford, Kia, Hyundai, the best in new inventory with great warranties. Great pre-owned inventory with the Sunbury Motors Guarantee. And a service department that's second to none. So much business, they need even more technicians. They take care of everything, routine to the difficult. They do it with ease. It's all at Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15, Hummel's Wharf. Online at sunburymotors.com. All right. Let's get the show off on the right track. The Matt Cotrillo rant of the day.
Well, if
what
I,
in your world, what in your world is quote stupid today?
Well, one thing, if you're a Jet fan, if you can stomach any more thing, bringing in Nathaniel Hackett as your offensive coordinator, get ready to see a lot of punt, pass, run, punt.
Well, okay, some guys are made to be coordinators, and others are made to be. And others head coaches. Being a head coach as opposed to being a coordinator is a different ball game.
Correct.
And at Green Bay, he had success. And some people, it's, you know, they can go be a head coach and they handle it complete ease, and they've got a, and others go from taking care of one side of the ball to now handling the whole show, and they can't do it. So he might be, and I don't know the man at all, he might be better suited just to take care of one side of the ball. I don't know.
Yeah, there are guys that are better coordinators than head coaches. I just thought that was just funny that he picks of all teams to go to the Jets. And I feel for Jet fans there. But then there's this other thing that I was kind of irked by. And this goes by one Brian Kelly. I don't know if you saw this. With his contract.
The $1 million overpayment?
Yeah. I don't believe for one second that he accidentally didn't know that he got paid an extra $1 million with that crazy contract he got in the first place. And you know what? He probably went to the athletic director with his stupid, fake Southern accent and said, "You know what? I think I got paid a little too much." Yeah. Number one fraud yet again.
Isn't it one check went to him, to his account, but then one went to his LLC or something like that.
Correct, yeah. But still, I don't buy for a second that he didn't know he got paid an extra $1 million, please. That's just as bad as a Southern accent.
Not a fan?
No, senor! No, senor! No, senor!
Yeah, I guess they're going to rectify that at the end of the fiscal year. Like, okay, that was a little different. I don't think I've ever encountered that before in sports where somebody, I got overpaid. Really? And what the heck does he have an LLC for? Why? Why would he have that? I'm totally confused by that concept.
He obviously thinks that he's a fraudulent head coach himself, and he's just hiding behind it, so he has something to fall back on.
Well, he went 10-4 this year. He wasn't that bad. A little bit better than the record of your team this year.
Yeah, but then he got embarrassed in the SEC championship game, as he normally does in those spots.
Okay. You're consumed with is hate too strong a word?
No, that is actually very accurate.
That you're consumed with it.
In this particular case, yes. I'll fully admit it sometimes.
So, yeah. So let's see here. He accidentally overpaid by $1 million first year, 10-year, $100 million contract, but they discovered the error and they moved to correct it. He was overpaid $1,368 in supplemental payments because of duplicate payments made to both Kelly's LLC and to the coach directly. Why, number one, why does he have an LLC? That's what gets me, is why does he even have it? I mean, am I missing something here? I mean, I could see somebody in accounting go, okay, where's the money go? Okay, it's like, and because they're probably, you know, probably hit Kelly's LLC probably has his name on it. And of course, his own account has his own name on it. So somebody in accounting made the error. I got that part. But why does he have the LLC? He's a head football coach. It's not a business. That's what I'd be asking. Why does he even have it? The double payments began in May and continued until LSU officials detected the errors in November. Okay. Went 10-4, be Purdue 63-7, would produce backup quarterback in the Citrus Bowl and backup coaching staff.
Yeah, exactly. Cool.
What was Notre Dame's record this year?
8-4, but they still won their bowl game against an actually like quality opponent.
Eight and four.
Yeah. He had the better record. That's fine. But no, I think Notre Dame had a much better ending than he did.
I'm just Frank Reich, by the way, the new Carolina Panthers head coach.
Yes. That's going to be interesting.
Well, what's interesting to me is Matt Rhule is more of an offensive coach. And a lot of times when guys, when they make a coaching change, they go with the opposite. Like, for example, Vic Fangio had been the coach. We just mentioned Nathaniel Hackett. Vince Fangio, outstanding defensive mind, coordinator extraordinaire, the whole deal. He's out. They bring in an offensive coach and Nathaniel Hackett. A lot of teams do that. They'll go the opposite of what they had. I had a disciplinarian. I want a coach's coach. I want a player's coach. I had a player's coach. Now I want a disciplinarian. You see it, you know. So they went actually the same direction.
I think the reason why they did was, A, Frank Reich is a very good leader of men, and I think that's what Carolina needs right now because that organization's in a lot of shambles. But, B, I think they're trying. They still have faith that he can develop a quarterback down there, even though it didn't work in Indianapolis.
Right. Yeah, Steve Wilkes, by the way, was doing a good job. I thought filling in. Let's see, Dennis Dodd, San Diego State makes an easy case for Pac-12 expansion. They've got a new stadium down there. You know, it's 35,000 seats, which is probably the right number for what San Diego State wants to do, even if they're in the Pac-12. It seems like the right thing to do. This is something I have talked about many, many times, and I know there's going to be a lot of discussion about Beaver Stadium. And James, I think, would like to keep Beaver Stadium at 100,000 if they can. As they go through the process. I mean, they haven't announced yet what they're going to do, but I think we all have a pretty good idea what they're going to do. And he'd like to keep it at 100,000, you know, because Alabama's right about 100, Texas is about 100, Kyle Field at Texas A&M's about 100, Ohio State's slightly better than 100, Michigan is technically is like, but Penn State's actually, we talk about Beaver Stadium 107 strong and the whole thing. Beaver Stadium is 106,000, I think 600, 700, something like that. So they lost seats when they did the ADA renovation a few years ago. And Michigan's like 107,000 plus in terms of actual seats in the building. I think James, I think, would like to keep it at minimum 100,000. I didn't say 107, but at minimum 100,000. But I think you're going to find more and more stadiums are going to, and this is something I've talked about for years, so this is not new territory, that as time goes with TV, tickets, and so forth, okay, less might be more. You notice that in Buffalo, which at one point, Ralph Wilson Stadium, which is now, I think, Highmark Stadium, at one point, that place had 80,000 seats. Now, of course, they have luxury suites and so forth that they had put in there that took some seats out. But their new stadium is going to be 65,000 seats. Washington, and you can complain, you can sit there and go, because of Daniel Snyder all you want. You gotta take the emotion out of this stuff when you're talking about logic, please. So don't get into what Daniel Snyder's done to Washington. That is irrelevant to this conversation, completely irrelevant. If you want to spout off about it because it makes you feel good, that's fine. I don't deal in that. But you notice the stadium he's considering building in Woodbridge is 55,000. And at one point, that stadium in Landover did seat 90. I think it was 92, something like that. And over time, and in part because of what he's done, fewer and fewer people have gone out there. But in building a new stadium, he's looking at 55. And I think that's going to be the trend more and more as time goes, because of television, less can be more for you. That's why the one that really surprised me was Los Angeles. I was surprised they built that stadium. And I think that stadium is 80,000 plus. I thought for sure that stadium would end up being like 65 or something like that. I mean, it's an interesting design. I mean, the first time I saw it was obviously four weeks ago now. Was the first time I ever saw it. And it's interesting in terms of design and so forth. But I think that's going to be more and more of the trend. And the same thing in arenas. Northwestern did the right thing in redoing its arena. Their arena is 6,000. Okay? I know Rutgers wants to do something with its basketball arena only because it's old. But 8,000, keep it at 8. Now look at Ohio State. Ohio State at St. John Arena. St. John Arena, I want to say, had 13,000 seats in it. Love that building, by the way. That was my favorite building in the Big Ten outside of playing at home. Then they built the Shot. Well, the Shot has 19,000 seats. I've never seen the Shot filled. I think the most I've ever seen in there for a Penn State game was 14,000. It's just the way it is. I mean, even when I went to the Breslin Center in a year ago, 14,000, the seats are sold. People, there are a lot of empty seats in the upper deck. A lot of empty seats. So I don't care whether it's football or basketball. I think there's going to be a trend to put boxes in, luxury suites, club seats, and things like that. And the seats in the bowl or whatever the design of the building happens to be, whether it's a stadium or an arena, I think you're going to have fewer of them. And that's a trend I've talked about for a long time. That is not something that's not new, like, I had the same conversation 10 years ago, and I think you're seeing the fruits of it now. So Los Angeles was the one that surprised me. I think SoFi Stadium is at least 80,000. Let me see here. Oh, yeah, some great stuff coming up there. Yeah, who cares? SoFi Stadium is ding, 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 ding. Come on. 70,240, expandable to 100,240 for major events. So, for example, you hold the Olympic opening ceremony there, you can get 100,000 in there. So it is 70,000. So it's a little bit larger than I thought it was going to be. I thought it'd be 65, but that's fine. And this sucker was expensive, too. Where's the price tag on it? Price tag is... construction, $5 to $6 billion estimated, including development. Hey, yay, yay. Wow. But that's to me, that's the trend. Less is more. In other words, like you went to the Eagles game on Saturday night, and the place was filled to the brim. And people say, well, hey, why don't we get more seats? No, you don't want more seats in Philadelphia. You want those seats at a premium and have that kind of crowd in there no matter what the record happens to be. And the crowd was phenomenal the other day, right?
It was 70,000 strong with standing room only.
Yeah,
I think the seating in Lincoln Financial feels like 68,000 and change.
Yeah. Yeah. So.
And that's what it was about at the Vet, too.
Yeah, the Vet was terrible.
True. Yes. I'll firmly admit that. Yeah.
I mean, the Vet was terrible. I mean, but the Vet was built at a time where everybody was going with the cookie cutter round multi-purpose stadium. So it's not the Vet. It is Three Rivers Stadium. It's Riverfront. It's Busch Stadium. You know, I mean, believe it or not, they were going to tear down Fenway Park. They were going to build a stadium like that in Boston for the Red Sox and for the Patriots. And so it's, believe me, it's not every, you know, it was universal that people were doing that. Then they finally broke free and they started building the individual baseball football stadiums, and it's been a great trend in sports because these stadiums are outstanding. I mean, you see Cincinnati Stadium, and you know, you got Great American Ballparks right next to it. You look at Citizens Bank Park is a beautiful ballpark. I think the Link is a great stadium. The Link is an exponentially better stadium than Heinz Field, okay? Or whatever they want to call it this month. Ironically, I think PNC Park's a better ballpark than Citizens Bank. It's, and I'm talking like not much, but there's something about PNC Park to me is a little bit better than Citizens Bank, but that's just a preference. The Link is way better than Acacher Stadium or whatever it is. But they're both relatively new, and they're, all four are relatively new, and all four are terrific. And they're all the right size. You notice Citizens Bank Park is what, 43,000, 44,000?
Yeah, about 45, I think.
All right, perfect. You don't need more than that. Okay, 38,500 is PNC Park. Perfect. That's the right size. You don't need a ballpark bigger than that. With 81 dates, you don't need that. You know, that's more realistic in today's market as what it's supposed to be. I mean, what the Vet, when the Phillies won the World Series over the Royals, the Vet, they had over 70,000 in there for the sixth game. I think it was game six they clinched it, right? They had over 70,000 fans there. But that's the only time they had over 70,000 fans in there. That's hard to do. You have to have something like that where you have a chance to clinch a championship where people are like, okay, you know, let's all go during the course of the regular season now. And the service of the Vet was awful, as we know. What they've done in that south side between that, Citizens Bank, the Link, and then Wells Fargo, that's as fine a sports complex as there is in America. It really is. All right. Can the Eagles stop the unstoppable Brock Purdy?
I just saw this, that two of their defensive assistants were on Iowa State staff when he was there. So there's some familiarity there. I found that interesting.
You know, the Eagles staff?
Yeah.
Wow, that's really terrific. So in other words, they know all of his weaknesses.
Supposedly.
Don't think too much.
When car repairs get difficult.
Well, I just don't know.
Me neither.
We get good. Sunbury Motors. More than quality new and used cars, Sunbury Motors specializes in complicated auto repair diagnosis. They can handle intricate repairs and even complete auto body with service open Monday through Friday, 7 till 4. And Sunbury Motors has made simple repairs easy. Maintaining your vehicle is necessary. Finding the time to do it is difficult. Welcome to Sunbury Motors Quick Lane. Open 7 till 4, Monday through Friday. Just walk in or call ahead. Relax in their remodeled waiting room with Wi-Fi, beverages, and snacks. Will Sunbury Motors factory trained techs take care of your oil change, tire alignments, brakes, and inspections. Quick Lane, 6:30 to 6, Monday through Friday, Saturday, 6:30 till 2. Sunbury Motors, Ford and Hyundai, North 4th Street, Sunbury. And Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. We take the out of auto repair.
Sports talk where your voice counts. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now from the Sunbury Motor Studio, here's Steve Jones.
So let me ask you something. These guys that are Iowa State with Brock Purdy, that you think now gives you a massive advantage. When they were at Iowa State with him, was he throwing the ball to George Kittle?
No, that would be correct. That would be incorrect because George Kittle was on the other side of Iowa. Yeah.
Was he throwing it to Deebo Samuel?
No.
Was Christian McCaffrey his tailback?
No. I didn't say it would help him, but I just thought it was interesting to throw out there. That's all. Not saying it's going to affect the game by any means, but it's out there. It's there. Just another observation of mine. That's all.
You hate the logic of this show, don't you?
Sometimes.
This show, I think, mentally kills you. You can admit it.
There's that, but it's also cathartic, so I get a little bit of both.
There you go. Perfect. I'm glad I can help out in some regard. Oh, my goodness. All right. Today's show brought to you by Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors, Kia, Routes 11 and 15, Hummel's Wharf online at sunburymotors.com. Good friend, outstanding writer, reporter, John Sauber, Center Daily Times. John, how have you been?
I'm doing well, Steve. As an Eagles fan, this weekend has been nerve-wracking.
This is the way it is for all of you. I mean, yeah. this poor guy I'm working with, right? You want to know why his weight's way down? Because of all the pacing he does.
Listen, I don't pace. I just turn into a deranged person when I'm watching the Eagles. I always tell everyone, like, listen, if people want me to watch games with them and stuff, I was like, I got to be in my basement by myself. Like, my wife and dog aren't around me. I'm alone because that's the only person I want to see me act that way.
Matt? Go ahead.
I concur, John. I feel your pain.
Yeah, it's just too much to watch with other people. It's overwhelming emotionally.
It can be. Yeah, absolutely. This Sunday's no different.
Yeah, this Sunday I will be locked in my basement like always. Right after Penn State plays Michigan, too, so I'll be rushing home.
There you go. Perfect. So let's get to this, then we'll get back to the emotional problems the two of you have. John, let's face it, the assessment that that Micah gave to Dick and me in the postgame show was exactly the same as he gave to the media in the media room. It was blunt and to the point. What were your thoughts?
Yeah, I you know, tend to agree with a lot of Micah's basketball philosophy. And, you know, I get where he's coming from, right, that they need someone to step up. But to me, like, listen, sometimes you're going to make four threes and you're just not going to win those games, right? And I think that might seem like oversimplification, but at the end of the day, like, that's a major reason why they lost that game, right? Like, I know it looks like, because it was a 20-point loss, but realistically it was closer to like 10 or 12 before the starters came off the court. And then if you're talking, you know, they make the normal amount of threes, then it's, you know, a very, very close game. And so I think sometimes you just go cold, right, and shots aren't falling, and it's easy for especially fans to, like, fall into the, like, you know, doom and gloom with every game. But this is a 30-plus game season. You know, it's I even tweeted about this, that there's a lot of consternation about that Rutgers loss. I'm going to be honest. I don't know of many people that thought they were going into Rutgers and winning. Jersey Mike's Arena, I still call it the Rack all the time, but it's so one of the toughest places to play in the country.
I mean, I still call it that till they give me a Jersey Mike sub, and I go, "Hey, yeah, Jersey Mike's Arena." I'm like, oh, "Yeah, I do that." Your point about the threes. Penn State was 3 of 13 in the first half in threes, and Dick Girardi and I looked at each other and said, "Well, it can't get worse in the second half." And it was 1 of 13 because one of the keys, you know, we throw out keys to the game before every game. Look, we got to kill time to get to the tip off, John. And I said one of the keys will be Penn State's ability to have more threes than turnovers. Which, by the way, if you look at Penn State stats, they have made more threes than they've had turnovers this year, which is a remarkable statistic. Well, they had 7 turnovers in the game on Tuesday night, and they only made 4 threes. You get 4 more, now it becomes a game like you're talking about, especially if you think it's a 12-point game. Guess what? You make 4 more and get to 8 as opposed to the 7 turnovers. It's a tie.
Yep. It is... You know, I see people like complain about this style of play too, right? Like that they're shooting too many threes, that they need to go to something else. Quite frankly, like this is the offense, right? Like I don't know what the alternative is with this group of players in particular. They don't have a big, like those post-ups are generally inefficient anyways. That's why I think even when, you know, Micah Shrewsbury has a big, you won't see him using them that way, right? I think he probably wants a more athletic rim runner type that, you know, maybe you put them in the pick and roll and they're catching lobs from a lead guard. Those mid-range shots, like they're less efficient than threes, so you may as well be taking the threes because they were open. That's the other thing about this. Like, there were a lot of threes they missed that I was like, oh, man, they hit those shots like 8 out of 10 times, and suddenly they're missing like what felt like 14, 15 in a row. And so, like, the alternative to me is just keep shooting, right? Because eventually you're going to shoot yourself out of it. Like, we've seen that with Andrew Funk and Miles Dredd. They've done it this year, and, you know, sometimes you're going to go cold, and sometimes you're going to heat up. But that's the nature of college basketball, right? It's an up-and-down season. I texted some people after the game that no one's going to remember this loss in a month anyways, right? Like, people will be focused on other things. So yeah, I know some people wanted to make this doom and gloom, but to me this is just like another, you know, it's a tick in the loss column and you move on. I don't think it's really indicative of anything for the program the rest of the way.
I think if there's an area defensively, and I'm going to ask him about this on the talk show tonight, so we'll find out if what I'm about to say has any validity or not. I may get one of those. No, you're wrong. All right, which is fine. That's why I ask questions. But I'll give this. I think that as much as we could talk about post defense, and that certainly is something that in this league you have to have, I think you have to make the post entry pass more difficult. And I think that's going to be part of what I think he's going to talk about. In other words, I'm on the wing. Don't make it easy for them to enter from the wing, right? You've got to be tougher out there. And I think that might be part of what he's talking about.
Yeah, I think that point of attack defense is so big, especially with, you know, you mentioned the post defense. It's not just that. It's that when other teams get to the rim, they can finish pretty easily, right? Because Penn State doesn't have a rim protector back there. So they need to be better at the point of attack and not letting guys get by them first and foremost. And I think you're right. Like, those post entries are a little bit too easy sometimes. I think they could front the post a little more and then help on the backside if they try to go over the top. I think, you know what I mean, they can sag off guys that aren't good shooters and then try and, you know, disrupt the pass when they try and get in the post. You know, I think, and I think this is largely what Michael was talking about after the game against Rutgers, but like the lack of people stepping up, to me, that was more defensive than offensive, right? Like that was
guys
being a little lackadaisical. Maybe that post entry is a little too easy. Maybe you're getting beat off the dribble a little too easily, you know, kind of expecting to have a big behind you. I'm like, well, this team doesn't, right? So you have to be really staunch at the point of attack, and they were not against Rutgers. And I think more often than not, that's the main issue defensively. I don't think rim protection when it comes to post-ups has been as much of an issue this season, unless you're facing Hunter Dickinson and Zach Edey, in which case, like, yeah, no one's recruiting to defend those guys because they're two guys that come around once in a generation, right? Like, guys like that just don't, you know, stroll through college basketball every day of the week. But I think that they need to be better about preventing the ball from getting there in the first place. And, you know, once it is there, maybe bring a double down from the wing. Just get the ball out of there, get it rotating, put the offense in a situation they don't want to be in.
Well, to be honest with you, Penn State is playing like the vast majority of the country plays the game.
Yep.
Just so everyone understands, the Big Ten is an absolute outlier when it comes to having Edey, Dickinson, Trace Jackson Davis, Derek Walker, Stephen Crow. They're an outlier. And that's why and to be honest with you, people wonder why the Big Ten struggles in the NCAA tournament, because they play this style of basketball and the rest of the country does not, and the rest of the country is not officiated the way the Big Ten is.
Yeah, and that officiating, I know, has been a point of contention. I've said it, and you know, I've been covering the Big Ten now. So I've been covering this program. This is my fourth season covering Penn State, and I covered Indiana basketball for a year. And I've seen Big Ten officiating for a while, right? Like, I know how it goes. Sometimes things get called for long stretches, and then they stop getting called in the second half. Or they don't get called in the first half, and then suddenly they're getting called in the second half. And so I think you're right that it's not officiated how other conferences are. But that play style point, I think, is the more pertinent one, because this is a team that, and I still expect them to make the Big Ten tournament, right, or the NCAA tournament, excuse me. And when they do, I think they're going to match up well with opponents, right? Like, there are not going to be many teams in the country that want to face one of the best guards in the country surrounded by four shooters who can, by the way, post up and not necessarily back you down to score, but back you down to get someone to collapse down onto them, and then the ball's on the perimeter and it's moving, and somebody somewhere is getting an open three. So I think they are built to succeed in the postseason more than they are in the regular season, and this is kind of just, you know, getting through that gauntlet of the Big Ten, surviving, getting to the tournament, and then probably outperforming whatever seed they get.
Yeah, and I think that is a possibility. But one of the keys will be Sunday, John, because at minimum, you've got to keep playing 500 weeks. You can't have 0-2 weeks. And I think that's what, you know, and then next week you got to go to Purdue, and then you have to go to Nebraska. Next week's the double road trip week. That's why I think Sunday will be another critical game, and Michigan's got Purdue tonight.
Yep, and that is, you know, they are going to be, or Hunter Dickinson is going to be probably a little tired after tonight, right? And maybe get a little worn down version of him on Sunday. And it's a noon tip, which is always weird too, because frankly, guys aren't used to playing at that time. I know I'm not used to covering games at that time. That's a very early morning for me. I'm very much a sleep in until 11 a.m. kind of guy. But you know, it's going to be a game that they need to put Dickinson in situations where they can take advantage of him rather than him being able to take advantage of them. And I mean, especially with Evan Mahaffey, right? They did this a little bit when they played at Michigan. They made him a primary ball handler like he was in high school, and they used him as a screener and the ball handler in the pick and roll, and it kind of put Dickinson in uncomfortable spots. He was trying to come up to the level of the screen. That wasn't working. He would sag back in a drop coverage, and that wasn't working because they would just get the ball to whoever, you know, was involved in the pick and roll with Mahaffey because they were good shooters. So They compromised him in that way. I just didn't see them do it enough. I think they'll be able to do that on Sunday. But you're right. They need to win this game because, I'm not going to lie, they're probably not going to win at Purdue. Nebraska, though, to me, is the one that I've circled. That one in Minnesota are the ones where if you're looking to make up the home loss, which Purdue was because of the game with Bustra, it's got to be one of those two games. And if you can get both, even better. But I think it's got to be one of those two.
No question. The other part, too, is I feel it when a big man, so in this case it'll be Dickinson, then Wednesday night it'll be Edey, you've got to make them move and run a little bit more on defense.
Yep.
You can't just let them hang back there. You need to have them moving and wear them out on that end of the floor. If they're going to play man-to-man, I'm out here. Come on out. And, you know, and that's, I think you have to do part of that. That's part of the wearing down process.
Yeah, and I think that could lead to some of those five-guard lineups, right, where maybe it's Pickett, Lee, Dredd, Funk, and Winner, and then you don't have anyone that you can kind of hide Edie on, and he's stuck actually defending on the perimeter. And listen, for as big as he is, for as big as Hunter Dickinson is, they don't move their feet well. And so if you can blow by those guys, they're not going to recover and block those shots as easily. Even involving someone like Kanye Clary, maybe instead of Cam Winner, with Clary's speed, he's going to beat those guys with his first step 9 times out of 10. It is funny that to me that they face Michigan and Purdue back-to-back after already facing Michigan and Purdue back-to-back. So at least they're getting it out of the way in chunks and don't have to face these enormous centers throughout the season. I think this is you nailed it. They've got to make those guys move. They've got to make those guys use their feet, and they got to try and make them stay in front of the ball, and they don't do it well. So if you get by them, then you're golden because that rim protection is completely gone at that point.
All right, Matt. I'll let you and John talk for a moment about the Eagles.
Listen, I go through this every year with playoff games. Early in the week, I don't believe that the Eagles have any chance, right? And then it gets to, like, today and tomorrow and Saturday, and I very much turn into, like, the Go Birds guy who's like, yeah, there's no chance. They're going to win by 45. It's going to be amazing. So I'm fully prepared for the letdown now.
I mean, Trillo's kids, neither one can spell, but the older one can spell Eagles.
That's right. And next up is Go Birds.
Yes, exactly right. That's exactly right.
The other stuff he needs to, like, advance to the next grade, can't do.
You're talking to a guy, John, that needed Motrin after the 0-2 championship game to Tampa.
I was 7 years old then, to make everyone feel worse about themselves now. But I was 7 years old then. The first game I remember was the Eagles' first Super Bowl against the Patriots. The Rodney Harrison interception.
Yes.
The first I can remember as a 9-year-old. And I got to tell you, that's not a fun first football memory.
No, I'm right there with you. I was right around your age. I was in sixth grade when they lost that Super Bowl.
Yeah, it was brutal.
Yeah.
Absolutely brutal.
But I like the Eagles this week. I'm going 26-21 Eagles.
I like it. I'm gonna go a little tighter. I'll say 27-23, but I think the offense is going to be able to score enough, especially with San Francisco kind of pinning their ears back along the defensive line. They're going to be able to run on them, and I'm going to enjoy my Sunday, or I'm going to hate it.
Basically the same way, yeah. But I was there last week, so I at least have that to ride with me regardless of what happens.
That's right. I went to the NLCS when Bryce Harper hit the game-winning home run.
There you go.
The eighth inning. And I was going to go this Sunday and then saw Penn State Michigan was at noon. I was like, guess we're watching this one from home.
Well, I'll be thinking of you, John.
Yeah, I'll be thinking of you, too, in those what could be potentially very dark times at about 7:30.
Correct.
I just got back. What did I miss?
a quick therapy session.
You know what? I feel it's so good that a guy like me can bring you two together on the same show where there's thousands of Eagle fans listening to this show right now that are feeling the same way you do.
It's very cathartic.
And they hate my Switzerland approach.
Listen, one day we'll get a Go Birds out of you. That's all that matters.
Well, if there's a whole bunch in my backyard, I'm going to yell, Go Birds, get out of here.
We'll work on it, John. We'll work on it.
That's right.
Hey, John, always a pleasure. You do great work as always. You're one of the great guys that you'd be around to deal with. It's really cool. Thanks so much.
Thanks, Steve. Thanks, Matt. Appreciate you.
I forgot that he was a Philadelphia guy, so there you go. I always loved John Sauber because of his work, but I love him even more with the now we got the Eagle Brotherhood going.
Can your kids spell any other words? I'm asking.
I'm not,
that was a serious question because he's so young. I mean, is he three?
He's three.
Luke
just turned three.
Yeah, three. Just turned three. All right. So I'm not going to expect anything. The fact that he can do it, I think, is remarkable. Can he spell any other words?
Trying to think. Actually, I don't think so.
So the only word he can spell is Eagles.
Pretty much, yeah.
Pretty much. Was he leaving letters out or?
Oh, right.
No, yeah. then October comes around, you get to sit. Does he leave any letters out?
Yeah, I think sometimes
he's three. Yeah. He's going to leave letters out.
Yeah, I think sometimes he forgets the G and the L, if I remember correctly.
Okay.
Yeah.
It's all right.
He starts like E A, and then it's like gibberish, and then Eagles.
I think it's so cool. He's into the stuff you're into, and I think that is really cool. I mean, as a father, that's got to be a neat thing.
Yes, and Mark's getting there, too, with learning his Eagles ABCs, his board book that I read to him every night.
C is for championships, or the lack thereof. Let's go to D. D is for Dunkirk. That's how Eagles fans feel after NFC championship games. All right, so... Don't have a sterling record on that one, do you? NFC title games, for the most part, not good.
No.
But it doesn't matter. All that matters is about this week. I expect them to come out firing on Sunday.
I'm kind of feeling the same way, honestly.
Like, out of the game. Now, whether they can sustain that, I don't know. That's going to be the mystery of the game. But I expect them to, I don't think it's going to be a soft approach in any way, shape, or form. I think they're going to come out firing, and they're going to try and put San Francisco on their heels, especially early in the game, because as a pass rush, you're not going to sit there wanting to unleash your pass rush, because early in the game, it's not an obvious passing situation.
Right.
Especially on early downs. I wouldn't doubt, I mean, they won't abandon the running game, but I wouldn't be surprised if the first 20 plays the Eagles run, I'm going to throw a dart and say, I think that they might throw the ball on 14 or 15 of them.
That's kind of what I'm thinking myself, and that was pretty similar to what they did against the Giants last week. I mean, they had maybe one quick throw, a run, and then they had the deep ball to Devontae Smith, and that's what got them going. So, yeah, I'm on the same wavelength with you on that one.
San Francisco, on the other hand, I expect them go in the first 20 plays, Kyle Shanahan, 10-10 run pass.
Yeah.
You know, because he does like to run the football. Now, these are just guesses, obviously, but just I'm reading the two teams. That's what I'm thinking. All right. Coming up, our play-by-play call of the day. That is next on News Radio 1070 WKOK.